Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Mark and Sarah, call it a comeback. Mark and Sarah,
been here for years.
Mark and Sarah talk about songs. Talk about songs.
Oh my God, we talk about so many songs and we talk so much about them. I'm your co-host, Sarah D. Bunting, and I am here with my co-host, Mark Blankenship. Hello, Mark.
But Mark and Sarah perseverate about songs doesn't have the same ring, so we just say talk.
It doesn't, but maybe that's on us for just not trying with perseverate.
What would my husband and my brother-in-law and my friend have done with those words had they turned them into theme songs? Find out in the alternate universe of this podcast, happening now through your favorite wormhole.
Mm-hmm. Just tuck your chin down to your chest. You can get through this. Okay, so welcome back to the Do Call It a Comeback season. This is episode 3, which means that we're on the 3rd of 4 in our opening round. And in our opening round, we are contemplating 15 songs. Mark is going to get into glorious detail about those in just a moment. But here is how it works in terms of points and moving on at this point in the competition for our hearts of the most definitive comeback song of all time. At this stage, it's just an up and down vote. So as we're going through the songs, if you decide that it should move on to the next round, you vote yes, and that gets 2 points. If you vote no, it gets 0 points. And by you, I mean me, Sarah D. Bunting, Mark Blankenship, and our Patreon supporters who also get to vote in all of these rounds. And if you haven't hopped onto our Patreon yet, it's at patreon.com/mastass. Your comments and votes are critical to this process, the outcome of which is black letter law. You can Google that. Footnote. I mean, don't Google that.
Except here's the thing. When some shit goes into practice and you start getting arrested for suggesting that someone that didn't win made the all-time best comeback, don't blame us.
Yeah.
We tried to tell you.
When you get pulled over on Old Town Road, for instance. I went there. All right. There is so much to say about all of these. So,
yes.
Mark, what 15 songs are we contemplating for good or ill today?
So when we finish this in 2024, here are the songs that we are talking about today. Meghan Trainor's Made You Look, Blondie's Maria, Lil Nas X featuring Billy Ray Cyrus's Old Town Road, mm-hmm. Billy Ray Cyrus being the comeback artist in question there. On the Floor by Jennifer Lopez featuring Pitbull, J-Lo being the artist in question there. One by the Bee Gees, Ordinary World by Duran Duran. Padam Padam by the returning Kylie Minogue. Popular by The Weeknd, Playboi Carti, and the comeback artist Madonna. And I know some of you are thinking, who? But I swear, we'll make you realize why we needed to talk about this obscure artist in a second. Pour Some Sugar on Me by Def Leppard. Practice What You Preach by Barry White. Smooth by Santana featuring Rob Thomas. I almost said Rob Santana, not the same. Soldier of Love by Donny Osmond. Sowing the Seeds of Love by Tears for Fears. Sucker by the Jonas Brothers. And Summertime. Well, I'll let you tell us who sings Summertime.
The Sundays. Bless.
Yes, they do. Mm-hmm. That's our group for today.
I mean, I don't know about you, and look, I've had struggles in every round, in every episode of this opening round, but this was like, I think this was the most densely settled with just representative songs for what we're doing. Would you agree with that? Or do we kind of think that about every episode?
No, I think that the back half of this season, the songs 31 through 60 are actually probably more on point than songs 1 through 30. I didn't realize that at the time, but now when I think about how long it took me to assign my points, I think that that is in fact correct.
Yeah, there were actual tears shed over this. Should we get into it?
Yes. So I think before we go a step further, you should explain to the listeners your unexpected connection to one Ms. Meghan Trainor.
I was thrilled to find this out and then felt a little bad about you know, the possible outcome of my choice for Ms. Trainor. But I did not realize that she was born in Nantucket, Massachusetts, and then raised in Orleans, Massachusetts, and went to Nauset Regional High School, which my family has had a house in East Ham, known as Fort Lobster on this and other podcasts, for years and years. And I'm the house manager of this fine property. And if you went up on the roof, in addition to pine needles dating back to the Reagan administration, you would also be able to see Nauset High School, which is undergoing a huge renovation, if in case anyone's writing a book about Cape Cod references and podcasts. Anyway, that was really like, it's basically the only high school like above the elbow joint of the Cape, I think. And so that was like pretty crazy to have that coincidence, because if I had to guess, like pick a state that Meghan Trainor is from, Massachusetts would have absolutely been in the bottom three of the states that I would have picked. Right? And definitely not the Cape. So that was kind of fun.
So for me, Meghan Trainor, as I mentioned in an earlier episode, is the germ of the idea for this whole season, because Meghan Trainor burst onto the scene in 2014 with the song All About That Bass, which I feel, if nothing else, will be the one thing that people remember about her, which is that song.
Lead in the open. No one likes this term, but here we are.
Yeah, exactly. So that song went to number one. It helped her win the Grammy for Best New Artist. It was followed up by a number four hit called Lips Are Movin'. I mean, she's had, honestly, quite a few hits. Her second album came out, the lead single called No, was a sort of awkward attempt to enter into hard-sounding dance music. Mm-hmm. And some of the most awkward choreography that you could ever hope to see in a video is Meghan Trainor in that video. That's all I will say. But then, that was in 2016. After that, Meghan Trainor went into the wilderness, where no hits were to be found. She released an album called Treat Myself, and no one decided to treat themselves by listening to it. And then she released an album called Taking It Back, which clearly was
everyone a did she, for a refund.
Yeah, exactly. I'd like to take... There it is! I was going to fumble for the joke, and you found it instantly like a pearl. To quote my esteemed pod wife, Taking It Back, which everyone was doing for a
full refund, sales tax included.
Well, this is the end of this season. It's been such a pleasure, Mark and Sarah. Okay, so what? And another thing that Taking It Back could mean is she's taking it back to the modern doo-wop sound, the slightly updated doo-wop sound that was on her first album that she abandoned and got no hits. And when she did that, when she went back to that sound, she got a comeback hit 7 years after the fact with Made You Look, which was a hit all over the world. It reached number two in the United Kingdom, and here in America, it went all the way up to number 11. And here's a clip of the return of Meghan Trainor with Made You Look.
Thank you for that. Breakdown! And here's that clip.
Have my Gucci on, I go wear my Louis Vuitton, but even with nothing on, bet I made you look,
I made you look,
I'll make you double take, soon as I walk away, call up your chiropractor just in case your neck break,
ooh, tell me what you gonna do.
I mean, sure. I'd also like to say that I, a certified old lady, was shocked to recognize JoJo Siwa in the video because I'd just seen her on like that Special Forces celebrity, like whatever Armed Forces Ropes Course show that I had to watch for extra, extra grade. And I was like, I have made some choices in my life. Good, bad, very ugly. This is what's up. I
imagine you might have actually been looking up from knitting as you saw JoJo Siwa and identified her correctly.
I literally, I'm pretty sure, was doing that. Soon, soon the poncho of my heart will cover this song. I did not put this through. I like the song. It is omnipresent. Every fact that you've stated qualifies it for sure. There were so many other songs that I, from my own like childhood and adolescence in the 80s, would have thought of before this. So it didn't make it through for me.
You know, it's interesting to hear you say that. And it makes me think about something that the patrons have started to say, including our listener and patron, Jenny. Hello, Jenny. She made the point that for her, thinking of something as a comeback is also connected to her sense of time. Mm-hmm. Because when you're young, 7 years is basically seven lifetimes.
Yes, totally.
But when you're our age now, 7 years is like nothing. And I've heard some people have said, wait, wasn't All About That Bass popular like 2 days ago? How could she possibly have been gone long enough to have a comeback? And I think that that's actually a pretty fair argument for someone who does not have the level of attention that I have to what's going on in the pop charts. Because, right, as you get older, I feel like Call Me Maybe wasn't yesterday by Carly Rae Jepsen, but maybe like 3 years ago. But no, that song is 11 years old.
Wow.
So,
yikes.
Exactly, right? I mean, this podcast has been going on since 2001 BC. So,
yeah.
So definitely that relationship to time is an important factor in what we consider a comeback, because if time is moving in a way for you where you're not even realizing that that person hasn't been around, then huh. Now, obviously, having said that, the patrons didn't give this song any points either. And I did, only because it was the song that got me to think about this entire concept.
Right.
And it is, to me, is it the greatest comeback of all time? No. And I'll tell you why. I have realized in the process of talking about these songs that I want to come back to have some sort of artistic distinction to count as the all-time greatest. And this song just sounds like it's an extra track from her first album.
Right.
And to me, if your comeback is just going back to the shit that worked before, I can't put you in any further than the round of 32.
Right.
But Meghan Trainor, you do get points from me. You do. If it were up to me entirely, you would be headed to that round, but I doubt she'll be moving forward.
Well, I think that's such an interesting point to keep, that we're going to keep returning to. Like, first of all, you have entries in this section and just like throughout this first round that it's like these were comebacks like in a monoculture time. So for certain artists, it was like they were coming back in a time in the MTV era from a time before MTV, and sometimes from a section of the culture that had been universally like reviled and put out with the trash.
Right.
Like 70s artists coming back in the 80s or 60s artists coming back in the 80s when they had MTV to help them. So you do have a new sound in those cases, but you're also like the culture and the way it paid attention to things was just different from this, you know, like TikTok post LimeWire era. As the only other person who understands a LimeWire reference, I had to go there. Thank you.
No, I feel you and I appreciate you. And Kazaa as well.
Kazaa. I always confuse Kazaa with whatever that early like Postmates service was.
Oh.
That would bring you like ice cream and marijuana.
Yeah. Oh, God. I got that. I used that service one summer to bring me the CD of the best of PM Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
Cosmo?
K-O-Z-M-O? Yes. Cosmo. Right?
Something like that. Yeah.
Listeners,
do you remember?
we are going to move
Kazoo?
On. I promise. But that idea of like how different to previous work does the comeback song need to be is just one of those, like, it's one of many criteria. Mostly I'm going on instinct, but sometimes I have to interrogate my own responses.
Yes. And that to me is half the fun.
Mm, Me too.
So, because for instance, this is an interesting segue into our next song, which is Blondie's Maria, a song that was number one in the UK when it was released in 1999, a full 17 years since Blondie had released any material. But in America, it only reached number 82 on the Hot 100, though it did reach the top 10 in the dance club charts, and it did reach the top 20 of the adult-oriented airplay chart. So make of that what you will. But for me, and I'll get into this more fully after we hear the clip, despite its rather low chart peak, this song is such an amazing example of a great comeback. And before we say anything else, let's hear the clip.
Who wanna make her all your own? Maria, you've gotta see her. Go in, set it out of your mind. Regina, Ave Maria.
So, to me, Sarah, what makes this song so great is that it sounds like a Blondie song. It's recognizably a Blondie song, but it is an evolution of their sound to fit what was happening in rock music in the late 90s. The propulsiveness of the rhythm, the slight electronic sheen of the backing track. I mean, it helps that Blondie helped bring all that to the forefront in their original era anyway. But the fact is that Blondie with Maria, I think, made a spectacular song that's so pleasing to my ears and still acknowledges their past, but also sounds like them moving forward. And even though this song was not a massive hit in America, it is such a great sign that this band could come back after a really long hiatus and still deliver something that people would want to listen to today. So that is why I did, in fact, give the song 2 points and pass it through.
I didn't. It was kind of close, but I hadn't heard this song in a while. It was nice to reunite with it. I acknowledge everything that you're saying as truth. I don't think this vocal is especially flattering to Deborah Harry, and I will leave it at that. But this also raises an interesting question of like the sort of circles that you were moving in at the time that something came back. And, you know, the broader sense, I'm sort of thinking of like Madonna, Kylie Minogue, Cher, and the idea that for some of us culturally, these are not people who ever seemed to have gone away.
That's correct.
Blondie, I would say, same, because I was around a lot of like music writers and I was going to a shit ton of shows at that time. And that band doesn't seem like it was ever, first of all, that it was sort of like disco and Studio 54 associated, but not with the negatives that a lot of other groups had to carry from that time. And it also seemed like the 90s sort of calling back to the 70s, like that Blondie was still okay to like, so to say. So they hadn't necessarily gone as far away. So
even though they hadn't released music in almost 20 years.
Right. So right. Like my impression was that this wasn't as big of a comeback as the actual like facts on the ground that you just described. So that, and again, like this particular section was like, I kind of wanted to put like 13 songs through and could not. So this one did not get my points. And part of that is just, you know, like, stop using your chest voice up here. Like, you're, you know, like as a lead singer, you're very beautiful. And I'm just gonna, you know, she's great. I love Blondie, but it's maybe not the best instrument in the game. What did the listeners do with this one?
They agreed with me in this case. Huh. And so all right. The song got 2 points from them. I would hazard a guess that among the people who voted for this song was friend and patron Adam Grossworth. Although I have no proof of that. I did not ask him, but I just suspect that Adam likes this song. Am I right? We'll find out.
Mm-hmm.
Next, Sarah, we have the longest running number one hit in the history of the Hot 100.
I mean,
19 weeks at number one. 19 weeks
that
at
is,
number one.
Okay. Yep. Well.
Yep.
What a time to be alive.
That song also launched Lil Nas X. It was one of those songs that was so massively popular that I can't, and also had the feel of a novelty song that, understandably, many people, including myself, assumed this would be the one song we would ever hear from Lil Nas X. Although, oops, it's turned out that he's had lots of hits. This, in fact, is the first of his three number one hits to date. Lil Nas X has become a major force in the culture, but also this song didn't just introduce Lil Nas X. It brought galloping back,
as it were,
center of the discourse, pun intended, Mr. Billy Ray Cyrus, who had been doing a show on some religious cable channel where he played a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And at this, I would say by this point was most famous for being the father of Miley Cyrus.
Yeah, I love that we have some parent-child shit happening in this season. That's, I
we
think,
sure
maybe
do.
A first, except for, you know, well, Unforgettable. We'll get to those.
Yeah, we'll get there.
We'll get to those Coles.
but this may be our, I think this is our only parent and child matchup where they're not on the same song.
Mm. Yes.
The Cyrus family. You can't kill them. They're always coming back. So obviously I'm talking about Old Town Road. Here is a clip of Old Town Road by Lil Nas X featuring your favorite achy breaky heart and mine, Billy Ray Cyrus.
Old Town Road, I'm gonna ride till I can't no more. Hat down, cross town, living like a rock star. Spend a lot of money on my brand new guitar. Baby's got a habit, diamond rings and Fendi sports bras. Riding down Rodeo in my Maserati sports car. God knows stress, I've been through all that. I'm like a Marlboro man, so I kick on back. Wish I could roll on back to that old...
I mean...
Fendi sports bras.
Yeah, Fendi sports bra. I wrote that down because I was like, oh my God, I forgot. There's so much like humor and like fond spirit on both sides of this track.
Yes.
That I think that's a huge part of why it did so well.
Yes.
And also like it's just a really good marriage of these two artists, I feel. But they're kind of chuckling respect for one another really sells it to me. I hadn't listened to this through in a while because who really needs to, because it was everywhere, but this sort of gets back to what I'm talking about in terms of not the monoculture aspect, but like Billy Ray Cyrus really was like a human Razzie award with the mullets and everything, and had gone away and seemed to have accepted that about his life, that he was like, I'm Miley's dad and that's where that is. It's fine. I'll just count my money. It's not a big deal. And then to play on that with this, and then he's just like with the line Fendi sports bra, like, uh-huh. Okay. I mean, yeah, like it all works. And I think that this... Sometimes it's a struggle for me to know where to place a X artist featuring Y comeback.
Right.
Because it's like how much of this is which part of them and how much of it is really a comeback. This one, I didn't have that issue and waved it through no problem. 2 points from me.
Yes, it's a straight six for Old Town Road. I'll just save everyone the suspense. And I think that's exactly correct. I mean, the fact that he came back on what then became the longest running number one hit of all time with a song that is just so goofy and so knowingly goofy, it's so pleasing that a song this fun and silly is mm-hmm. the one that nobody could get enough of for a long time. And it also is absolutely fair to wonder about how much these featured artists contribute. But in the case of this song, Billy Ray Cyrus makes the song.
Yes.
Like, it's just not the same without him.
Right.
Okay, so we do not have a clip for the next couple of songs. I kicked us off with three in a row. But next we have, oh, Sarah. I mean, look, it's On the Floor by Jennifer Lopez featuring Pitbull. And Jennifer Lopez, years ago on Fame Tracker, a site that you used to run mm-hmm. with some esteemed colleagues, Tara and Dave.
I did not. I can never take credit for that. Oh, thank you for giving it to me, but that's too. Mr. Adam Sternberg, and I occasionally would write some stuff about Tom Cruise's tooth running for Congress and shit like that.
Yes, you're right. I'm sorry. A site that you did contribute to, yes. However, and that I contributed to. It was, in fact, how I got introduced to the entire world of y'all. It's now us, I guess.
Uh-huh.
But many years ago, when Jennifer Lopez was just starting her music career, someone wrote on Fame Tracker that Jennifer Lopez basically seemed to look out the window one day and think, I'll be a pop star, sure. Mm-hmm. Like, the level of passion for making music just seemed to be less about art and more about filling out that investment portfolio, which I've always just remembered as being an apt description of yes. how I've always received her music.
Just like grimly determined.
Yes.
To be famous and sparkly and has executed on that consistently. I will say that. It's not something yes. that interests me, but I respect it.
And so I actually realized a couple of episodes ago that there was no way I could put way forward her song On the Floor. Although she had not had a top 10 hit in 8 years as a lead artist when On the Floor suddenly became a number 3 hit in the United States. But in the way that some of these other artists that we've talked about, you want to talk about someone who does not fucking leave the culture ever?
Yes.
Jennifer Lopez.
That was my deal with not waving it through.
Like
in this case, Jennifer that it was Lopez, like, was it? Yeah. She is like so appealing to look at. And like I said, I've written about this numerous times on Tomato Nation's Girls Bike Club, and I'll link to that in the show notes. Just like me and Tara being like, she, like getting a blowjob from this individual has got to be just a mind-blowing commercial experience. I don't know how else to put it, but she's just like, no, this is going to blow your mind. And you're like, okay, like I signed the NDA. Let's like show me something. And she will. But she won't be having any fun. Like, I don't think this is a person who has giggled since God was a child. And right. this track is kind of that vibe, that it's like, it is a, her timbre I don't care for sort of in the abstract, but she's beautiful to look at. Her butt is fucking a legend. And this is like, it's a fun track in which she is not having any fun. Like,
yes,
the
because
only
right.
time I think she's ever had fun in the last like 10 or 15 years was in Hustlers, I'm going to say.
Well, but even then, she did also get to just learn how to be a pole dancer mm-hmm. and like,
yeah.
got to be like, I'm going to be the fucking best. But then she got to talk about Swimona. So, yes, there were jokes to be had there. But you're so right that on this song, especially, it just feels like she was looking at her to-do list for the year. And she had written in large letters, make dance hit. And then she was like, okay, that's yeah. what we're doing this week.
Yeah. And the vision board was like this glittery fucking Versace body stocking. And it's like, I am in favor of that. She is not taking money from me. Go ahead. But it's just like, is this a comeback? And I almost, if we had like documentary evidence that she had put comeback like on her vision board and plotted it this way, then I would wave her through just because she's like being Aries about it. And again, respect, I get it. I am a white knuckle control freak. But for our purposes, it's like, did you really go anywhere? No. You've always been here trying too hard, so not getting the points yes. this time.
She may have come back to the Hot 100, but that was just because when she wasn't there, she was too busy starring in a weird cop procedural starring Drea De Mateo as well. Like, yeah. It's just because she didn't have time to be a pop star because she was too busy releasing 7,000 other projects. So anyway, okay. no one...
Was that a Spectrum original, that show? I feel like I watched that yeah. show because I was like, these are some amazing lady butts, and I need to be on board.
Maybe it was Shades of Blue, I think it was yeah. called.
I think Ray I'm Liotta positive, was in that shit. Not.
I refused. He was Ray Liotta, wasn't it? Okay, I refused to look this up, but I believe her character's first name was Harley.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I choose to believe that's correct.
Yeah. Don't add us. So, let us live here where that's true.
Please don't look it up, because then we'd feel bad that you spent your time doing that. Exactly. So that's 0 points across the board for On the Floor, perhaps unsurprisingly. Now, next, Sarah, I have to ask you, in 1989, were you at all aware of the Bee Gees song One?
Oh my God, yes. This was like bonkers everywhere. And the fact that I can't wait to hear your take on this, because there was like a little mini mushroom crop of these dudes from the 70s that were like, them? Like, what are we? Hey, 1989, what are we doing, would you say, with our lives? Like, the first Bush, the H.W. Bush presidency, like, there was a lot of shit going on, and I think we still haven't unpacked all of it correctly. This song was absolutely, like, for somebody who was born in the early to mid 70s, this was really like an event, that it was like, okay, the Bee Gees have now been like forgiven. We have now, like, the passage of time has charged off their sins against the culture, even though I personally sort of loved disco all along and just like quietly listened to these things on the oldies station and tried not to draw attention to it. But this really had been, this was like the group's sort of third act. It was timeline-wise, and you can talk a little more about this if you want, but timeline-wise, it was kind of tangled up with Andy Gibbs' untimely demise and the fact that, like, me and my classmates had been super crushing on Andy on Solid Gold back in the day. This is absolutely like the one of the nay plus ultra for me of what we're doing with this season, right down to Robin, I guess, is like little newsy cap and giant blazer, and you're just like, oh my God, like, this is the Do Call It a Comeback season. What is up? So yeah, I waved it was number two in the section for me, waved through no problem. Is it a good song? Well, that's not necessarily what we're talking about this year, is it? No.
No, it is not a good song, actually. It is a completely forgettable oral wallpaper experience that has no sex organs whatsoever.
All the worst instincts of Barry as a songwriter. And then it's like someone, I don't even know, like, barf chunks got stuck between the keys of a Casio. This is what's happening.
I mean, you think about a song like Tragedy, which is just so full of energy and over-the-top excellence.
So good.
Think, how did we go from that to this, like, room temperature vanilla pudding cup of a song?
AIDS and HIV would be one guess of mine.
Well, yes. So, like, right, the culture's homophobic, racist, and sexist refusal to embrace anything related to disco.
Yes.
Even though the Bee Gees are neither black nor female nor gay, they were, more than anyone, held up as the symbol of disco in its prime, and then were cast the farthest out.
Yes.
When the culture revolted against disco. After having an astonishing run of number one hits in the 70s, they didn't have any songs reach the top 10 from 1979 until 1989, when One reached number 7. Now, in the interim, Barry Gibb did have some hits as a duet artist with Barbra Streisand. Mm-hmm. He wrote the song Woman in Love for Barbra Streisand. He wrote Islands in the Stream. He wrote Heartbreaker for Dionne Warwick. So Barry Gibb didn't exactly go away, but even by 89, even he had not had a hit as a songwriter or a solo performer in a while. So truly, it seemed like that the Bee Gees were just going to be forever trapped in glittering amber as the icons of a time that had long since been buried. So for them to come back and have another top 10 hit, I just think is such a nice, muscular flipping of the bird to the culture. And I love that about it. And that, for me, despite the fact that the song is bad, I don't really care, because I agree with you. This is why we're here.
Yeah.
It absolutely got 2 points from me as well.
And this is sort of what I'm talking about that that particular range of time when an artist that was just like unable to go out in public without being hissed at, basically,
yes,
could make this kind of a comeback in the era of MTV, that this is like absolutely a peak exemplar. And Barry, like, they all just look so happy in the video.
Yes.
They look so happy that they're like, oh no, like tomatoes are not sailing into the frame stage right. What a delight that we actually get to still do this thing that we were good at for, like, starting in the mid 60s. This was a famous group. So,
and it's also worth noting, for one thing, it's worth noting that you're correct, I think, about the fact that this song was able to be a hit partially because of Andy Gibb's death the year prior. I think that probably softened the culture on them a little
bit,
because it's really sad when you think about the fact that these guys had this brother and then he died.
Yeah.
That's just really fucking sad.
And that was really, I guess I was like 15 at the time, but I believe they put the making of this album on pause to sort of deal as a family with Andy's passing. And then they resumed kind of at the end of the year. But I distinctly remember being in the whatever junior lounge, which with my friend Marin, who had known since like God and we were in diapers, and just being not even crying, but just being stricken by this news that,
yeah,
like, this was what we thought was like love and adulthood and what we were sort of driving towards as children in the culture was Andy Gibb in a satin baseball jacket with no shirt on underneath, and that he had just died. We were just like, like, it just, as a 14 or 15 year old, was very like existentially disorienting.
Yes. So all of that said, I think that really helped. And I just, another thing I like about this song, even though it is now not very highly streamed, it's not very well remembered even, I think it opened the door for the decision on the culture's part that the Bee Gees are awesome.
Yes.
Because now I think everyone can say, you know what I fucking love? The Saturday Night Fever soundtrack.
Yeah. Like,
and if you dig back in the archives of this podcast, you'll find a whole episode where we rank every song on it.
Yeah. And Tragedy, oh my God, like,
is a perfect song. 10 out of 10.
It is. Yeah. It's very long too, but it's one of those long songs that doesn't feel that long.
Oh my gosh.
That's,
I mean, just
said,
the little sound, just the sound of the bomb exploding in that. Anyway.
Yeah.
The patrons did not pass this song through, but I suspect it's because the song is not as memorable as the comeback story.
Yeah.
But whatever. You and I both passed the song through. That's 4 points for one. Hey, Bee Gees. Now, we also do not have a clip for Duran Duran's Ordinary World. And Sarah, I didn't pull a clip because I don't really know that we need one. Duran Duran has already been represented in seasons like the Best British Bands season, mm-hmm, the Best Boy Bands season. They actually won the Best British Bands season.
Oh, yeah.
Duran Duran had not had a top 10 hit since 1988 with a song that I don't even remember called I Don't Want Your Love, which reached number 4.
I don't remember that shit either. And I,
like,
was still buying all their albums, including Thank You, which, like, speaking of Thank You, you're welcome. I was the only person on American soil who bought that and listened to it all the time and thought it was really good.
So, hey. But then 5 years later, they did come back with Ordinary World. And for me, Sarah, this whole thing about time comes up again.
Yeah.
Because even though it was only 5 years, it felt to me like a seismic shift when Duran Duran suddenly got to have another hit. Because I thought that, like the Bee Gees in the 70s, Duran Duran was going to just forever be a band from sexy videos of the early to mid.
Yes, agree.
So for me, it was no problem. This was an absolute yes. 2 points.
This one sort of, I thought this was going to be an automatic yes. It wound up being, like, I ranked these in, like, list order throughout the process just to sort of work some things through for myself. This did get through, but it was number 8 in the section. So it was kind of trailing. That speaks really to the strength of the competition in this yeah. section, but it's also like that the passage of time and like what it means to have a hit at the beginning and then the end of the same decade, and like how certain decades especially seem to function differently in terms of the passage of time. But in the end, even though sort of emotionally it felt like other songs were bigger comebacks, when I looked at the internet, that turned out not to be true. Like my impressionistic sense of this song as a smaller comeback was not correct, is A, and B, I cannot vote against fucking LeBron and his Liam Gallagher hair and white platform boots, like just impregnating me with his whole style. So A plus. And that here again is a band that I think also, like the Bee Gees, may have thought that they were done.
Yeah.
And they're making this video and it's like this big fisheye lens and John Taylor is like, yeah, that's right. I could still get it. And you're like, yeah, you can. So,
well, you know what I'm thinking about right now? So this was a hit in 1993, which means that Duran Duran had a hit after the rise of grunge, mm-hmm. which was specifically positioned as the antidote to the types of hits that Duran Duran had in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So Duran Duran survived an entire wave of popular music that was designed to discount and disrespect them, and then came back and had a hit, and then followed it up with another hit, which is the song Come Undone, which reached number 7 from the same album, which I also love.
So good. And they kind of had this like opening the door to boy bands vibe at this time that was like, if you're not comfortable with, you know, heroin and flannel, there is another way. And then Carson Daly is there with like a tiki torch and it's all fine.
Follow me.
Come with me if you want to live on the dance floor.
So the fact that they had this and Come Undone and they're now in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I'm happy to report that it's a straight 6 for Ordinary World because the patrons pass it through as well.
Love that.
Now, have you been at all noticing the rise of Kylie Minogue's Padam Padam this year?
Not consciously, but once I started, like once I previewed the song to prep this episode, I was like, oh, this guy. Hey, buddy.
Yes. Padam Padam has been a huge comeback hit for Kylie again in the UK, where it reached the top 10 and has now, it's on an album of hers that just debuted at number 1 over there with a huge sale. It was not big enough here to actually even reach the Hot 100, but among gay men, it was the summer anthem of 2023, and you know I lived that experience, so Fire Island and Provincetown 2023, Everybody was freaking out about Padam Padam. I actually did not pass it through because Kylie Minogue is already going through with another song, but I just thought we should at least acknowledge that she did it again this very year.
Yeah, this is the thing, though, that I spend enough time sort of hearing from what's happening, like hearing from Fire Island and Provincetown, that it's like,
yes,
when has Kylie Minogue not been next to our thoughts? Wearing pink eyeliner. Never. Like, I don't experience the world in a way where Kylie Minogue is coming back from anything. She's always just sort of like over by the buffet talking to someone, which great.
Right.
Happy for her. Want the best for her. Didn't feel like this was a comeback because, and also, a lot of Minogueana is indistinguishable from itself to me. So this did not go through for me, but I am very happy for her and I hope she has fun counting all of her money.
That's right. And you're also correct that this song could have been released by Kylie Minogue immediately after Can't Get You Out of My Head. And it would have been like, yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, but this video, like it's fun to look at. Everybody's having a great time. Good for everybody. But I don't think it's going anywhere this season.
No, it was a 0 from all of us, in fact. But God bless you, Kylie.
Indeed.
Now, Next, we've got the song Popular by The Weeknd featuring Playboi Carti and Madonna. I do have a clip, so why don't we listen to the clip before we talk about it?
Great.
I know that you see me. Time's gone by. Spent my whole life running from your flashing lights. Try to own it, but I'm alright. You can't take my soul without a fucking fight.
Oh, 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 oh. I know what she needs. Oh, she just wants the fame. I know what she thinks. Oh, give it a little taste when I'm back.
Well, you talk for a while, because I have many thoughts and questions, and they're all fighting to get out.
Yeah,
so you start.
Just from a sheer chart perspective, this is Madonna's highest-ranking song on the Hot 100 since 2012, when she got to number 10 with one of her worst-ever singles, Give Me All Your Lovin', but that's neither here nor there. This song has peaked at number 43 in the United States, but I heard it on the radio in Washington, D.C. just this week. Like, there's a Madonna song currently playing on Top 40 radio, and that is not something that I thought would ever happen again. In the U.K., it reached number 11, in Austria, number 8, in Canada, number 10. Now, it took Madonna being a featured guest on a song by The Weeknd tied up in his very poorly received HBO show, The Idol,
yeah,
to have a comeback hit. And really, this to me is more like a song that doesn't really say Madonna's coming back. It's more like saying Madonna is so famous that if we're going to have a song called Popular, she should be on it.
Right.
It just doesn't, this seems like a real blip in her legacy, not anything substantive that will add to it. But I did at least feel like it would be fun to note that Madonna is still having hits in this, the year of our Lord, 2023, when she is in her mid-60s. And that's pretty cool. But please, Madonna, this song isn't a big enough hit to really shift the needle, and she never goes away in our lives. So it was a zero for me, not going through, but still happy to have it here.
Yeah, that's, you basically saved me the trouble of articulating a lot of this stuff, because that's where I was at. The clip that you pulled is like the only section of the song that if you didn't know that this was Madonna, that you would be like, oh, there she is. Like, she's been... she's just buried by the arrangement, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but it put me in mind of like, Take a Bow era when she was doing some, like, she had a nose ring,
right,
and like her little fur coat, and she was doing the Walk of Shame and trying some R&B stuff. And it was like, I like that this exists, but where does she ever go? She's like air or the government. She's always there.
That's right.
And she won't be shut down as we're recording this. So, I'm glad that we got to think about her in this context, because I think that there's so many axes and different discussions that you have about each song in terms of time elapsed. And does this person that we think about all the time actually figure that heavily in the culture at large, blah, blah, blah. But as much as I appreciate the thought experiment, no points from Buncey.
Yeah, none from the patrons either. But, you know, again, glad to have you here in our conversation for a while, Madge. Something tells me we'll talk about you on the show again.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you are the impetus for the next song on our list, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on how it came to be here.
That is Pour Some Sugar on Me by The Leopard of Deafness. This is, I think, one of the first five songs that I would have thought of based on the concept. We don't have a clip because we don't need one. It was absolutely omnipresent. But this is one of those, like, what is the difference between the early 80s and the late 80s? Thompson Twins versus Whitesnake. And, like, what acts are going to be able to do both? Well, Def Leppard was able to do both while retaining most of their sound. Like, this is not in, you know, this is not like you would hear this and Photograph and be like, what? Like, it's obviously the same band, but here you also have that story about the drummer and the car wreck and him making his own comeback with one arm on this giant, like, stadium rock drum kit. And that there was a second narrative that fueled this album. Not that the album wasn't good. It was like timed perfectly for what the culture wanted on the radio at that time. But it had that extra story aspect to it. So I absolutely waved this through. It was number three in the section for me. And we've talked many times about how this is sort of a prototypical video of the era of just like, here we are like clowning around backstage and trying to figure out how the ropes course works for the show. And do you want to fuck? Can I pour some like condiments on you? No, that's cool. Here's a, you know, wet nap. Enjoy your day and I'll find some other groupie. Like, we have talked about this song before. It's a solid song. And I think it absolutely meets this brief for me. It checks like almost all the boxes in my Jennifer Lopez list of qualification boxes for the season. I don't know what I'm talking about. But anyway, 2 points. You?
Well, first of all, I do want to say how much I love this song. And if you do want to go back, listeners, and find this in our archives, I think that was a pretty good episode where we talked
about it. It was episode like, I mean, it was pretty early. Double digits, I think, we were still in.
Yeah. I just remember us being like, wow, this song is dope.
Yeah. We hadn't heard it in a while, and we expected to be like, I think it was a listener suggestion. We were like arms folded at first, and then it was like, all right, fine.
Yeah,
British,
you know,
mulleted gentleman. We're with it. Okay.
Now, the patrons also gave this song 2 points, so they agree with you. I think this is one of the least appropriate songs in the entire countdown.
Really?
Yes. To me, this is just the next, this is just the hit that they had from their next album. Like, there was nothing in between.
Okay.
There was nothing in between the Pyromania and Hysteria albums that they released that flopped. It was just a few years in between. And like, they were just a band that had had some hits, and then they came back and they had even more hits. And sure, Hysteria had more and bigger hits than Pyromania, but this to me is just the trajectory, the upper trajectory of a popular band. And
fair.
I think that there's nothing about this whatsoever that I would ever say should have it be described as a comeback, respectfully.
Huh. Okay.
But listen, I actually
I was about to make a terrible joke about giving you a hand for that explanation.
Upon hearing your statement, I mean, I do understand where you're coming from. I don't think you're just blowing smoke.
I don't disagree with you. I just feel like because of that story, especially, it felt at the time, it felt like a huge comeback, even though really, you're right. It was just an evolution. So.
But I think that this is one of the things that's made this conversation of this whole season much more complex than I expected it to be, because comeback is not a straightforward term.
No.
And you can also, we've already talked about, there are plenty of songs that if you just look purely at the stats are obvious comebacks, but then they don't feel like comebacks. So
right.
pop music is an art, not a science.
Yeah, true.
And I think, you know, clearly.
And you know who likes to complicate things, whether needlessly or not? This podcast, yes.
One time I was with some friends and we were playing Scrabble, but then we started playing this other version that we called Scramble, and you put all the letters on the table, and then we kept making it more and more complicated, and I finally said, y'all, we do not have to be gifted kids about it. Let's just play the game. Anyway, so that being said, the song does get 4 points because clearly there are people among our patrons who agree with you. So we'll see what happens and where this conversation takes us with Def Leppard.
Mm.
Next, if nothing else, I was going to want Barry White's Practice What You Preach in this season because it's from an album called The Icon Is Love, which doesn't make sense, but also does make sense.
And it's absolutely on brand for Barry.
It's just ludicrous. So Practice What You Preach was Barry White's first charting hit since the 70s. In the mid-90s, it reached number 20 in the Hot 100 and went all the way to number 1 on the R&B chart. And it is a song of single entendre where he's like, you're over here telling me that you know how to fuck? Well, why don't you practice what you preach? Like, we know what that means. But before we take another step forward, let's let Barry tell us. Here's a clip.
At my share of love, but some say I'm
mean, Barry?
I don't get it. Yeah.
I did not give this song a pass through to the next round because it just didn't really make much of an impression on me in 1994. But I really like this song, and I think that Barry White is great. That is all.
Yeah, I just don't. I remember this song as a comeback, like contemporaneously, but I don't like it. That's not the criterion that I use. See, my vote nose firmly held for Meat Loaf in a previous round. But yeah, this just sounds like cheap and kind of cynical to me. And like that they put all the Barry White branding elements in a blender and were like, this is what we got for adult contempo in 1994. I think it does meet the brief, but and it was close for me, but it just, again, this is a very tough section and you have to do a little better than just Barry Whiting around a boring arrangement. So,
oh, could you call it Barely White?
Yes, Barely White.
Although Barely White sounds like something Bory? More complicated. That
Bory White?
Bory White, also that too.
Barely's better, but yeah.
Okay, now next, talking about songs that we don't necessarily like, but that we pass through. Well, there's Smooth for you. Mm. We talked about this song because we were forced to by the Grammy voters in our Record of the Year season. I've just had a lifetime fill of Santana featuring Rob Thomas on Smooth. I do not have a clip of it because just, no, I've had a lifetime fill. But this song is obviously an extremely potent example of a comeback. It had been decades since Santana had charted at all. He had never had a number one hit until this song, which was number one forever. The next single from this album, Maria Maria, was also number one forever. He won Album of the Year, Record of the Year. He was an inescapably dominant cultural force. And then he went on to have more hits from other albums. The Game of Love with Michelle Branch. Like, it just never fucking stopped for like half a decade after this. And all of the songs are bad, if you ask me. They're all just boring. They're smarmy. They're like real proud of themselves because here's some noodling and it be me on a guitar. Listen to me, Mom. Like, no, shut up. And there's just something so aggressively laconic about it that I feel insulted by it, and I can't articulate that in a way that is rational. That's just how I feel. And yet, I have to acknowledge when a song is truly indicative of what we're talking about here, and this one is. So yes, I gave it 2 points, and so did the patrons. Damn it.
It was my number 9 in this section. It was hovering, God. But it was like, the number 8 slot can be this or Duran Duran. Who has said transphobic bullshit lately? Not fucking Duran Duran. Bye, bitch. I understand that is not a fair rubric to use for this season, and it was very close. This absolutely meets the brief of a comeback on a bunch of different axes. I just had decisions to make, and I chose life. fuck that
like
guy and his noodling.
Like George Michael's t-shirt, it prompted us to do in the Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go video, you chose life.
Yes, I chose life. I may not be in the, may have to live with good old Smooth in the next round. I guess we'll see.
Well, yeah, I mean, look. I'm going to tell you what, I will do everything I can do to keep this song from going into the Sweet 16. And I don't care if you feel like I'm putting my thumb on the scales. The law is not perfect either.
Yeah, exactly.
That we are writing here today. Now, Sarah, I do have a clip of our next song, which is Donny Osmond's Soldier of Love.
Oh, my God.
This is a song that many people in the patron group are loudly cheering for. People are definitely on Team Donny for this. And I want to say I am shocked that record label politics or who knows what have made it so that the original hit version of Soldier of Love is not available on Spotify.
Wow.
All we have are an extended remix, and who wants that, and a live version, hell no.
Mm.
So you actually have to go to YouTube, where there is no high quality audio version of Soldier of Love, to hear the song that was such a big comeback that, just like the Bee Gees, Donny Osmond had been sent into the wilderness.
Yes.
And when they sent this record around, the record company did not reveal who the artist was.
Yes. For like a week. And they like solicited guesses. Amazing. Yeah.
Because they were like, no one will give this song a fair shake if they know it's by Donny Osmond. So they had to give a sort of mystery run to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the song, which by the way was written by Evan Rogers and Carl Storken, who went on to form the group Rhythm Syndicate that had the hit song P-A-S-S-I-O-N in 1991, which I loved at the time. They also worked with Rihanna on her first album, so they're responsible for Rihanna's first single, Ponder Replay. Like, these guys really have had a really interesting career. One of the most interesting things they did, though, was bring Donny Osmond all the way to number 2 on the Hot 100 in 1989 with Soldier of Love. Without further ado, here is a clip.
You'll see much deeper when you read between the lines, 'cause there's a fire burning.
So I want to go back to a statement that you made. Would you rather have Duran Duran or Santana? And I just say, would I rather have a completely effervescent 80s pop hit than lots of other things? Yes, I would. So yes, I did wave this song through.
Oh God, so did I.
Yes!
This is, like the Bee Gees at around the same time, this was massive for people who were born in 72, 73, because we remembered the Osmonds. We also remembered like the Sonny and Cher show when there was like a babysitter over and we were up late. Like, these were 70s artifacts. And when you look at how, quote, old they actually were during the comebacks, like the Bee Gees are one thing. The Bee Gees are like roughly my parents' age, a little younger. Donny Osmond is like, Donny Osmond is like my husband's age. Like, he really was not that old. Like, he made this comeback and he was like 31 or something like that. Like, it was crazy. But this was everywhere. And this was such a, like, you could not get through a day in 1989 in the New York area without hearing it. And PLJ 95.5 was, I believe, the record or the radio station that did this promo.
Yes,
that was like all
the
week.
Mystery
like
artist.
Can you guess who it is? And I, you know, once again, Marin, hey girl, I think was like, that's Donny. And I was like, Donny who? Donny Wahlberg. And she's like, no, Donny Osmond. I can definitely tell. This arrangement is classic late 80s synthy cheese. The lyric is an absolute like confetti drop of cliches. Donny Osmond is having a goddamn blast. He's like, finally I can make my car payment. You're like, oh, you know what? Fucking A. Because like, I mean, the whole like Marie and her weight loss journeys and, you know, talk shows that kept being put on at 3 a.m. and then canceled was like paying the whole family's bills. And it's like, Donny, you deserve this. He still looked great. He had the tight jeans on. And P.S., we have not seen or heard the last of Donny in this season for other reasons entirely. See you next week. But
oh my God,
this was a no-brainer. I would have given it 5 points if I could have.
Where did you put it in your personal rankings?
Number one.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, because there is that added bonus of just how delightful the whole story is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just think that joy cannot be removed from the comeback narrative, frankly.
No, I agree.
Also, sidebar, I don't know if you watched the reality competition show Claim to Fame.
Maybe.
You know, you would definitely know if you did. It's a reality competition series where a group of people are in a house and they're all related to someone famous.
Oh, and then right. Okay.
The other contestants have to figure out who that person's famous relative is, and one person gets kicked off each week, whatever. This season, Donny Osmond's son was one of the people in the house, and none of the other contestants could figure out who he was. But there was this whole thing where moms of people who were writing about the show all instantly clocked that this guy looked like Donny Osmond.
Mm-hmm.
I read multiple stories about like mothers recognizing Donny Osmond. And I also right. recognized him immediately. And I was like, yes, I guess I am someone's mother because I am here for it. I actually, turns out, am a really big fan of Donny Osmond and want him to succeed.
Yeah. And the Osmonds as a family band, like they actually could really play. And if you like yeah. that sort of like mid-70s TV cheese, that, yeah, I would investigate that further. It is good, clean, Mormon fun.
And just like with the Bee Gees, as you said, this is another one where the culture gets to flip a bird to conventional wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so it was a straight six. Everyone agrees.
Love it.
Donny Osmond, Soldier of Love, absolutely deserves to be here. Now, I was also quite delighted when you suggested our next song. Do you want to talk about it?
Sure. It's Sowing the Seeds of Love by Tears for Fears. And this is definitely one of those entries that's like, let's interrogate the fundamentally unreliable memory. Because in my head, this album came out when I was in college, like the end of college. And it had a much more crunchy, like Edie Brickell, hippified contrast to the first album with like Shout and Everybody Wants to Rule the World. It wasn't nearly that long in between the hits. It wasn't nearly that crunchy and sunflowery. It wasn't great either. This song, like, I remembered this song being that it was like, oh, I'm so glad they're back. I'm so glad they survived into the 90s. That wasn't the timeline at all. And this nope. Vocal is actually not as pleasant as you want from a charting hit. But with that said, I stand by including it because I think your initial reaction was like, oh shit, yeah, that thing. And I think it still deserves to be here. I did pass it through. It was kind of towards the bottom of my ranking. I'm not sure it's going to go any further at all. Never mind for me, but I'm glad it's here because I think the sort of unreliability of memory in terms of like, oh, this was a huge comeback at the time. And then you're like, wait, I don't even have the right fucking presidency that we're talking about right now. So I did pass it through, but I'm prepared to be the cheese, sowing the cheese of love all by myself. What did you guys do?
Well, so I really was delighted when you mentioned this song because my first response was, oh, great pick. And this song was the first single from their album, The Seeds of Love, which was their follow-up to Songs from the Big Chair, which was their big breakthrough album in the States. It had Shout, Everybody Wants to Rule the World, and Head Over Heels on it, that album. Now, that being said, it was only 4 years later, and it was the very first single. So in a way, it was kind of like the Def Leppard argument I was making before, where it's right. like, well, really, if you look at it, this is just the next thing they
yeah,
did.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was a big hit. It reached number two in the United States. The album was in the top 10. I agree with you, too, that the song now isn't good to
no.
me. Just like,
I'm all set.
Wow, this song is... Why is this song 12 minutes long?
Yeah. For one thing? No. And then it fades out and then it comes back and you're like, no, okay, no, yep, take care.
That is actually...
Safe home, Roland.
There really should be a law against the fake fade out because no.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at you and hey, Jude, you're part of that too. But that being said, this song was so close for me because emotion trumps reason in conversations like this. And even though the argument also applies here that I made for Def Leppard, this song still felt like a comeback to me when I thought about it initially when you mentioned it, but also when I think about it now. There's just something yeah. about, like, because it's like, I feel like that Def Leppard is the kind of band that people were fans and they talked about them and they were kind of always on MTV or whatever.
Right.
Tears for Fears was there and then they just weren't there at all. And then suddenly they're back.
Yeah.
That being said, I did not pass it through, but I would say that for me, this was my ninth place song in this group. And Sarah, the patrons did pass it through. So you are not the cheese standing alone.
Okay. Oh, but it does feel like we have another four fiesta facing us at the end of this. But we still have a couple songs to talk about.
Including the song Sucker by the Jonas Brothers. Now, Interestingly, the Jonas Brothers, one of them, hosts the show Claim to Fame. So there you go. And Sucker was written by Ryan Tedder of One Republic, who has appeared earlier mm-hmm. in this season. And this is the only number one hit that the Jonas Brothers ever had, which is pretty interesting. And they had not been in the top 10 of the Hot 100 since 2008, when this song reached number one in 2019. So that is 11 years without a Jonas Brothers song. Now, the individual members of the Jonas Brothers had gone on to solo careers. So Joe Jonas, I think it was the one who was in the band DNCE, and they had that song Cake by the Ocean that was a big
right.
hit. Nick Jonas had a hit song called Jealous. Like, they had already evolved into the sort of omnipresent and rather exhausting pop culture presences that they continue yes. to be, where we have to be made aware of every argument they have with their wives and all that crap.
We're currently living through a Joe v. Sophie moment right now.
But that being said, Sucker is a dope-ass song, and when the Jonas Brothers had a number one hit in 2019, I was like, well, knock me over with a feather. So here's a clip of Sucker.
I'm a sucker for you. Stay the word and I'll go anywhere blindly. I'm a sucker for you.
I love this song so much. There's absolutely no reason for me to play it 15 times in a row prepping this. But I was like, oh my God, this song is a perfect pop song. I love it. And it fits the brief perfectly. Happy to pass it through. Sorry about your troubles, Joe Jonas and Sophie Tucker. But this song is so fun. The video's so fun. The velvet jackets. Everyone's so pretty. I love it.
To me, this song, you can really hear, was written by the same guy that wrote I Ain't Worried.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the, like, exceptionally good version of that.
Yes.
This song just has it all. I think it's a perfect pop song. It was so easy for me to pass it through, and the patrons did too.
Yes.
That is we've had quite a few straight sixes in this episode. And,
okay.
As stacked as this episode is, I'm glad to see that we're all clustering around certain songs, because come on. Tell me how it gets better. And, like, was anybody checking for a number one hit from the Jonas Brothers in 2019?
No one had that on their bingo card. And look, if this podcast became Mark and Sarah Talk About Sucker, I'd be fine with it.
Yeah. For at least 2 years. I think we could get 2 years out of it.
Oh, yeah. Jesus.
So, straight six for our boys, the Joe Bros. And, honestly, another thing that made that song so good is that they managed to grow up successfully. Like, this is yes. a sexy adult song
yeah.
from a group that we had last heard from when they were all minors.
Right. And but they're not trying too hard to be, like,
yes.
hard. They're just being like, this yeah. is what we, like, one of us is married to Priyanka Chopra, who is, like, one of the most beautiful people on earth. Hi, this is what that looks like when we make a video about it. Hey, like, okay.
Yeah. Get into it, mm-hmm. because we sure do. Like, seriously, I agree. Such a treat. I actually will probably listen to the song again later today.
Oh, God, me too.
Now, our final song is by a band that I only know about because of our friendship, Sarah, and that's The Sundays. Well, notwithstanding their cover of Wild Horses, but my discovery of The Sundays through you has been such a treat, because you've also recently been giving me other songs of theirs that I should listen to, and they're really good. Here's the thing. The Sundays are good. I actually was recently able to contribute to a music writer's newsletter where I wrote about the song Here's Where the Story Ends, which we listened to in episode 100.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just such a great song. And before we go further, because I do want to hear your thoughts on summertime, let's hear a little clip.
This is the comeback song is a little annoying to me. I wouldn't put this in the top half of their songs. Like, I mean, I love most Sunday songs, but there are a couple that you're like, and this is actually kind of one of them. Like, even that lyric is like, the sunshine banishes the dark. Like, Harriet does not believe that for a second. Harriet is some phantom, like fog settling on your mohair sweater, like Moors of England shit. That's what makes them good. Like, they're considered jangle pop, but it's like jangle phantom pop for sure. And that they consistently hit with shit that, you know, this felt a little like insincere. Here's where the story ends, was like, I think their biggest hit before this. And that was,
yes,
at least felt like them, even if it was deceptively peppy in the arrangement. But if you cared about indie shit or stuff that came on at the end of an episode of 120 minutes on like Sunday at 1 a.m, or you had seen the Sundays on tour and you had been waiting for this last album for literal years, and this was the end of it for them. Like, apparently they're married. They still make music. They're just never gonna, they're like super paranoid and self-loathing, and they're just never gonna publish any more of it after a quarter century. Like, this was sort of a victory for fans of this band that was relatively obscure. But is it, like, if a phantom falls in a British forest and no one's around to notice it, is that a comeback? I'm not sure. I passed this through because if you cared about this band, it qualified. But, is it a comeback if, as far as everybody else is concerned, they don't even exist? I don't know the answer to that. Thank you for pulling a clip. It's always nice to reunite with Harriet and David, but I think I am the Stilton standing alone. Your thoughts?
You certainly are, but I think that there is room in this season for songs that are comebacks for one person. That's totally fine.
Two. Hi, John.
Hey. So just a little fun facts about the song, though. On the alternative radio chart, the Sundays reached number one with Here's Where the Story Ends. And then the lead single from their next album, Blind, was called Love.
Right.
And that song reached number two.
Also kind of a bleaty, insincerely upbeat track, in my opinion.
And then this song, Summertime, from their third and final album, as you mentioned, Static and Silence, reached number 10. So the Sundays were actually pretty consistent hit makers on the alt-rock charts, even managing to reach the top 10 in 97 with a song that sounds like this, when we are definitely into the Limp Bizkit-ish era at that point.
For sure.
Or it was like the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones pancing around with their ska. Oh, Jesus.
Save Ferris.
Yeah. So I don't really know. And it's like you said, is it a comeback if no one even knows the band exists?
Yeah.
It is a comeback for you, and I honor that. It was not for me, nor was it for the listeners. So perhaps unsurprisingly, that is a 2 points only situation. But listen, am I happy to know another Sunday song? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now we have to have some serious talks. Okay, here are our straight sixes, the songs that are guaranteed to go through. That they are Old Town Road.
Uh-huh.
Ordinary World.
Yep.
Soldier of Love.
Mm-hmm.
And Sucker.
Wow. I mean,
honestly, I'm not mad at any of these choices.
I'm not either. That's a full locker room. That's a full inside of the locker door wallpaper set. Yeah. Right there. I'm content with all of that.
And that means that because that's four, that means all of us, me, you, and the patrons, get at least 50% of our choices passed on to the next round, which is nice. Now, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 songs with 4 points. So we're going to have to get rid of one of them.
Okay.
They are Maria, One by the Bee Gees, Pour Some Sugar on Me, Smooth, and Sowing the Seeds of Love.
Is there anything that we only voted for and the patrons didn't?
Yes, that would be One by the Bee Gees. The patrons did not vote for that.
But
I think that's wrong, and I think we need to put One forward.
Yeah, I agree. I think that
here's what I'll say.
Ejecting Carlos Santana from the conversation and our thoughts is something that I can live with.
Yeah, because you know what? Smooth was amply represented in our record of the year season.
Yeah. And you know what doesn't need to make a comeback is fucking old man rock and roll bigotry shit. So take Eric Clapton, get in the car, and fucking beat it.
Well, and similarly, like, we don't even have What's Love Got to Do with It by Tina Turner in contention at all, because we have just run out of things to say about it,
mm-hmm.
even though arguably What's Love Got to Do with It is one of the greatest comeback hits of all time. And I don't have anything left to say about Smooth either.
Yeah, that's...
Okay.
I mean, I could also live with getting rid of Maria, honestly, but Blondie seems cool. Carlos Santana seems like a chode.
So I think that we should just say Smooth is out. So here is our top eight from this group. It's really good. Maria, Old Town Road, One, Ordinary World, Pour Some Sugar on Me, Soldier, Sowing the Seeds of Love, and Sucker.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, we've got a couple of my favorites from the entire group of 60 in this mm-hmm. group going through, so I'm very happy about that.
Oh my God. We haven't even gotten through this round yet, and I'm already like clenching about the next round and like these difficult decisions that we have to make. I hate it.
I know. I honestly can't wait though. All right. Well, listeners, thank you so much. We are suckers for you. And Sarah, as you know, I am a soldier for your love at all times.
Oh, you're the one for me.
Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs is hosted by Sarah D. Bunting and Mark Blankenship. That's me. And edited by Sarah D. Bunting.
That's me. This podcast is a proud member of the Bleav Network. Learn more at bleav.com.
And if you want to talk about songs, suggest a season theme, get a pop chart reading or customized playlist, or have a cocktail with us and your fellow listeners, then come on by our Patreon page at patreon.com/mastess, where you'll find polls, happy hours, and tons of extra episodes and content.
We're also at Talk Songs on Twitter, at Mastass Everywhere on Instagram, and mastass.podcast on Facebook. Or just email us, talkaboutsongs@gmail.com. All that contact info will be in our show notes. Scroll down. Hope we'll be talking about songs with you soon.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to Bleav. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Bleav.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.